in scale, yet singular in focus. His new album is Lovingly. It's a sensory journey for mind, body, and soul. More information about First Avenue presenting East Forest at the Cedar Cultural Center is available at first-avenue.com.
Programming on KFAI is supported in part by the Minnesota Humanities Center, distributing more than $6 million in cultural heritage grants. Funds are available to individuals and organizations that will create, celebrate, and teach the art, culture, and heritage of the state's diverse culture. That includes, but is not limited to, indigenous organizations, historically underrepresented communities, recent immigrant communities, and veterans. Application and deadline information is online at mnhum.org/grants.
Support for KFAI comes from The Dakota, presenting the very best of Julie London by Jaden James and Alex Brown, Friday, November 28th. Jaden James brings her powerhouse vocals to pay tribute to jazz legend Julie London. Jaden will be backed by a full string, horn, flute, piano, and upright bass band headed by Alex Brown. More information about The Very Best of Julie London by Jaden James and Alex Brown is available at dakotacooks.com.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them, and not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
Bonjour, hello, welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Leah Lem. Today we're revisiting our chat with Karen Diver. Karen is from the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa and is a senior advisor to the President for Native American Affairs at the University of Minnesota. In our conversation, Karen speaks about her rich background in leadership and advocacy work. She shares her insight on leveraging the unique strengths of tribal nations within higher education. Please enjoy our conversation from spring 2024.
I tell a lot of young people that are trying to advocate for themselves, I tell them the thing my mother said to me when I was young. If someone is doing something against your interests or trying to harm you, you don't speak up, you're helping them. You do not need permission to speak up for yourself from anybody. You can't count on other people to do it for you. You're the one in the room, you do it.
Bonjour, hello, welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Cole Primo.
And I'm your other host, Leah Lem. Miigwech for joining us. Native Lights is more than a podcast and radio show. At its core, it's a place for Native folks to tell their stories. Every week, we have captivating conversations with great guests from a bunch of different backgrounds. We're talking musicians, artists, community leaders, doctors, healthcare advocates, educators, language warriors.
Keep going.
You name it, we have a great group of people, wonderful mixture of passions. So we talk with our guests about their gifts and how they share those gifts with their community. And it all centers around the big point of purpose in our lives. And I can't wait to continue amplifying Native voices today. Cole, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's been a while since we've had a chat, so I'm greatly looking forward to it. Since we last had an episode, I have moved into the place in Stillwater in the East Metro, but it's been, you know, a whirlwind and just getting everything set up, feeling like an official homeowner now, doing some mulching around the yard, doing some
grading.
Lawn mowing. I mowed the lawn not that long ago, and now it already needs to be mowed again, I guess. Mm-hmm. I guess that's just how it goes.
Were you wearing your cargo jean shorts and New Balance shoes? Some crew socks?
New Balance shoes that are just green.
I know.
Just all greened up.
Gotta embrace it.
Now, I do need to find some nice throwaway shoes, though, because they get pretty dirty real quick. But how are you doing, Leah? What's going on?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Just hanging in there. I have, you know, my days are full of work and family, mm-hmm. and I like it that way. I don't have too much exciting going on. Ooh, but you know what I am doing soon is I'm going to my 20th college reunion.
That's
here
right.
Very soon. 20 years. So I'm flying out to Boston.
Head back to New England.
And staying in Cambridge and just, I don't know, letting the memories fly back to me.
That's awesome. That's awesome. It's crazy it's been that long. I remember going out there, visiting you and all that stuff. It's a great city. Both Boston and Cambridge. And just, you also went to Berklee, of course, College of Music. And, you know, it's just awesome. Just taking, was it the T?
The T, yep. You don't need a car. Not like I had one anyway. Or my license, but we won't worry about that. But it's a perfect time of year. Ugh. So I look forward to that. So that's what I'm up to.
Nice. Well, that's kind of a good transition because you're talking about the university that you went to, or the institute. And our guest is very much involved in a very prominent university in Minnesota. Today, we're speaking with Karen Diver. She is currently the senior advisor to the president for Native American Affairs at the University of Minnesota. Prior to that, she was the appointee of former President Obama as the special assistant to the president for Native American Affairs. So no big deal right there. We'll definitely make sure to ask her about that. And before that, she was the chairwoman of the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa from 2007 to 2015. So yeah, I can't wait to talk to her about all the great work she's doing at the university, but also gain some insights from her previous roles and all that she's doing in Native country. So here she is.
Hi.
Bonjour.
Bonjour, Karen. Could you just start by, you know, introducing yourself?
Bonjour, Anine. Karen Diver, Indigenous. Karen Diver, citizen of the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa.
Great. How are you doing? How's the family doing?
Everybody's good. We're glad it's spring and looking forward to summer. Got to see the Northern Lights and...
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's almost gardening season, so all of that is good.
Oh, yes. It's time to plan for the garden. Do you have a big garden?
I help my daughter with my formerly big garden at her house. It used to be my house. She's learning to do vegetables, and I'm pretty much just doing the pretty stuff anymore.
Excellent. Well, we like to start our conversations with something a little tangential to our lives, like if there is anything that's on the top of your mind lately.
Maybe the demise of democracy and how important it is for us all to vote and to get our families to vote and our friends. This point in time is an all hands on deck. This next election, presidential election, is an existential threat to everyone in the United States, but Indigenous people, because so much of our equities are grounded at the federal level. You can be angry about lots of things, but while you're waiting for perfect, it opens the door for harm. And so if we want to have structures in place where we can actually have some influence and things like that, then we need to make sure the federal apparatus is working. And then also pay attention down ballot, because there's this insidious movement at lots of levels to impact our rights. And so whether it's a school board or a county commission, pay attention and exercise your rights to vote.
Excellent. Yes, voting. I know a few people who choose not to vote, who say that there's not enough representation, but that's changing.
It is, but it's who we have, right? I mean, so either throw down and put your name on the ballot or find our allies. Mm. In the very worst case scenario, prevent harm. Thanks for letting me get that off my chest.
See, that's why we ask. That's why we ask.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we want to, you know, start off talking about your role that you currently have at the U of M, being the senior advisor to the president at the University of Minnesota. Like, what's the role like, and what are you setting out to accomplish?
I am a part of the president's senior leadership team in the office of the president. So I answer directly to the president. And I work with those senior leaders around tribal initiatives. I facilitate the communications between the office of the president and tribal leadership. And then, of course, you know, we had the truth report come out last spring, which was the tribal narrative history of the university from the tribal perspective. you know, kind of talking within the institution about, okay, this is our history. How do we then look at that and our past and create that better future? And the tribes gave us some guidance in the truth report, but it will all be, of course, informed by our really contemporary communications with tribal leaders about what feels right to them, what are their priorities, does this feel reparative, is it meeting your workforce development needs, where do you see gaps, what are your learners experiencing within the institution, and then we start working on things and always in consultation with the tribes, are we getting it right? I'm trying to change them from within and make sure that tribal nations and Indigenous peoples find the University of Minnesota a place that serves their needs and is welcoming to them, that can remove barriers. I'm working with faculty. How do we have Indigenous pedagogy, so to speak? How do our learners see themselves within various disciplines? Do they see themselves? Where do we need to put extra effort? So faculty representation, staff representation, student support. I'm working on all of it.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today, we're revisiting our chat with Karen Diver. Karen is from the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa and is the senior advisor to the president for Native American Affairs at the University of Minnesota. That's a lot. And you've been in the position, what, 3 years now?
Yeah, 3 years this month, yeah.
So just a few things.
Yeah, but we're getting some stuff done, though.
Yeah.
I mean, we got the tuition waiver, tuition and fee waiver, and then the state picked it up the following year. It was such a great idea. So now the state is funding it. So we pivoted our resources towards housing scholarships for freshmen. The goal is to continue to invest in affordability until we meet the full cost of attendance. We are not there yet. Some of the detractors would say, you know, like, why aren't you doing the whole thing? Well, it's still a public institution with a budget it needs to follow that needs legislative appropriations that haven't been coming. So how do we make that slow and steady progress and keep taking bites out of the apple? And that's my job, right, is to keep pushing a little more, a little more. So we got that. This year, we put out guidance for ethical Indigenous research that requires tribal consent. Whoa, we have to actually ask yes. And no is no, right? And having data sovereignty agreements and behaving ethically and not extractive and exploitive. So that will be going for the guidance from my office now, but I've been going through the rather lengthy and involved process of making it official university policy. If that happens, we will be the first institution in the country to have as official policy Indigenous research guidelines. And might I point out, just in the nick of time, because 2 weeks ago, National Science Foundation put out guidance that said tribal consent will be necessary for any research proposals that come to them. So we are right on the money in terms of timeline and being well positioned. That's a huge thing, actually. So we're getting some good things done. You know, student support services are getting beefed up and funded and made more robust. We're engaging with American Indian advisory boards on the campus. So we're not just hearing from tribal leaders, we're also hearing from learners about campus climate, barriers. So we're kind of going bottom up and top down just to get more feedback. And then we're working with faculty to give them resources about some of the great Indigenous scholarship that's happening across the US. We've developed online library resources. So if they're in a particular discipline, they can go see what's out there from Indigenous scholars that might be new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so this is the first time this position existed at the U.
Right.
How do you feel in that position? Does it feel like it's super welcoming, or has it been, you know, a little bit tough, or what's the atmosphere like?
I will actually tell you that I have been remarkably surprised at how incredibly gracious and supportive and receptive most people have been within the University of Minnesota. So I'm operating at that senior level. So I'm interacting with the chancellors, the deans. You know, when I tell them, I'm like, here's a problem I'm hearing about. Explain to me who, what, where. I start to tackle this. And they're like, let me put you in touch with this person, and they'll weigh in. And many of these things, you know, I'm just telling them what the president's hearing from tribal leaders. And some of it's been organic on their part without me actually help. Now, I should probably preface all of this by saying I was actually really super pleasantly surprised. We did this fairly thorough inventory across the 5 campuses. And it was like 36 pages of Indigenous initiatives at some level. Now, mind you, some of them come and go. They might be grant-driven. So it wasn't like we were not doing anything. I just don't think we kept track of what we were doing. And so that was a really good place to start with tribal leaders. It's like, hey, the glass isn't half empty. The glass is half full. You know, we have faculty and the colleges that have been engaged in your communities in really meaningful ways, you know? So how do we keep that going and make it more robust and understand that we can create these partnerships and leverage the knowledge creation that's happening? They recognize that there was a gap. It's bigger than just DEI, right? These are nations, these are governments. And so I did a 5-part online training for faculty and staff. It's like, okay, I can't train all of you, but here it is online. And people have been using it. They'll tell me, oh, I took your training. I know who you are, you know, and people are choosing to be a part of the work, and you really can't ask for more.
That's great. What can other universities learn from what the U of M is doing when it comes to building relationships with tribal nations?
Well, first and foremost, recognizing that they operate in concurrent jurisdictions, right? You know, the first thing out of my mouth with anybody, regardless of what I think they know or what they think they know, is tribes are governments. The reason we do this work is that, you know, your land acknowledgments are cute, but they're not enough. You know, this is about what you're going to do, but it's also about why you're going to do it. And it's because of your interactions with tribe and your social license, right? Your permission. You know, we pay a lot of attention to lots of other jurisdictions, and it's the failure of the U.S. educational system that even people in Minnesota aren't taught about tribes and their history and their contemporary place in our communities, their jurisdictions, their authorities, the scope and breadth of the responsibility that tribal governments have, right? And from the university, we were specimens. You know, we were an interest group, and we have all of these poor social indicators and other things. And let's get to the root of that, you know? So trying to change that narrative from do to do with, and also the leveraging of the value that tribal communities bring, and that we're not just different, but there's a wealth of information there that's valuable to everybody, right? So example, these times of climate change right now, everybody's like, oh, you know, great wise native person, tell us your traditional ecological knowledge, help save us from killing the planet, you know. Well, we don't trust them. We don't want to tell them nothing, because they used to come in our communities and not ask. And so teaching them about tribes as governments, it's like, do you have a tribal consent? Do you have a tribal advisory board? What is your data agreements? Just because there's something to be learned, we want to control the dissemination and the narrative and the word choice. We want to tell our stories the way we want. And while it might be beneficial, you know, how do we package that in a way that continues to be safe and it doesn't become commodified or otherwise misused, right? And that's all about respecting tribal sovereignty. So, you know, it's a different way of thinking. And this is probably the most difficult part for me in a mainstream institution. And this is true with the federal government or the university, is we come to the work with a vastly different set of values. Mine are informed by my indigeneity, clearly. Western-based or majority culture values, they're just different, right? And they celebrate different things. They think success is different things. And so reframing the narrative around matching our work as an institution to be compliant with the values that are present in Indian country or a particular community, that takes work and commitment on both sides. And if you're not willing to do that, then you don't deserve to be in partnership, right? Because it's not. You're exercising power then, and there is no place for you here.
That's awesome. We'd be remiss not to bring up your role before your work at the University of Minnesota as the appointee of President Obama, former President Obama, as the special assistant to the president for Native American affairs. How the heck was that like?
So that was interesting. You know how work-life balance in Indian country? Nope, there was none of that. We did have good weekends, but it was, I got there at 6 a.m. I didn't know any given day when I would leave. They said that you will never know what your day will bring, and that was so true. I scheduled my day in about 10 to 15 minute increments. I was always leaving something early to already be late. The portfolio was 27 different federal agencies, which was a lot for the Domestic Policy Council because they like have a division that's just for education. Well, that division, which had way more people than I did, they only had to deal with Department of Education and Health and Human Services because of Head Start. So they had two federal agencies. So I would get everything from like the Office of Management and Budget from any of these 27 agencies that was regulatory or policy to weigh in on. Hopefully I knew it was coming. Sometimes I didn't. And sometimes you would catch things. It's like, oh, no, you know, danger. This requires tribal consultation. So, you know, I would have to tell OMB, kill it. They have to do consultation. This is not ready to go. I will not sign off on it. And tribes will be pissed. So I was there for the last year and a half or so. And one of the questions I had for them before I went is like, is there enough stuff left to do? I'm not going to be a seat warmer. If I'm going to leave this, I need to know that there's meaningful work. And they actually said one of the reasons they really wanted a tribal leader is because of the gravitas that they could bring to get some of the really big stuff over the line. There was going to need to be a fairly concerted push. And it was actually less than, you know, like the 15 months or so, because they try not to do anything major within the last 4 to 6 months. You're just wrapping things up at that point and creating that succession plan. In theory, let's just say that, given who the next president was. So it was intense. It was tiring. It was frustrating. Probably the only upside I had to all of it is I remember saying to them, I'm like, you don't get how this works. I work for tribes. I'm employed by the president. So once you understand where my priorities are, what are you going to do to me? It's my job to push you. What are you going to do? Send me home? Great. I miss everybody, you know, and I'll tell on you when I get there. So I was like totally chairwoman the heck out of that. They didn't know what hit them.
That's awesome. Did you get to meet Obama? What was he like?
You know, that is one of the smartest people I have ever met in my life. But he was also just so intellectually curious. If you were talking about something and you could really see that he kind of wasn't connecting some of the dots, it was my job to say something. It's like, I did it nicely to him, you know. He didn't get full chairwoman. You know, it's like, well, with all due respect, Mr. President, have you thought about this or this? And he would actually sit for a minute and take it in and change his mind. To me, that's the sign of leadership and wanting to do the right thing, being a public servant in the very best possible way, that we're not going to decide for you. Do you know what I mean? That we're going to look for those solutions that we think work. And I admired his values and consider myself really lucky to have been a part of it.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today, we're revisiting our chat with Karen Diver. Karen is from the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa and is the senior advisor to the president for Native American Affairs at the University of Minnesota.
Obviously, you're super passionate about all that you do. Like, what led you down the path that you're on? Like, what sparked that initial passion for working for the community and all that good stuff?
So I was a relocation kid. You know, both of my parents are Fond du Lac enrollees, and with a lot of the same stories from that generation. Dad was a boarding school kid, got taken away when he was 6. His little brother was 5. He felt responsible for him. And mom, big families, no money, chemical dependency, family violence. My parents chose to go away on relocation partly because financial. Nobody would hire natives up here, you know, in Cloquet, Duluth, for good regular jobs, day labor, yeah, but not jobs that would take care of families. So my dad felt that pressure, but also just for opportunities. They wanted to go far enough away where they wouldn't come home every weekend and not try to make it work, but close enough to get back to within a day if they needed to, because this was home. So they chose Cleveland, Ohio. So the gift that my parents gave me was they never owned a home. They never had a new car. They put all four of their children through 12 years of private school. And we heard constantly that education is something they can't take from you. Education is the key to your own self-sufficiency and your own self-determination. And they made a conscious choice, despite how they were raised, to be the place where a lot of it stopped. They're my heroes. They were my best friends. I felt a sense of obligation from that. Do you know what I mean? They didn't tell me I was obligated to them. That was just love. But I was just like, I felt like I owed them to do my best. And then I screwed it up when I was 15. I had a baby. And it was like, okay, now I really got to make it right. And so I knew I had to go to college. And so I moved up here to go to UMD to access Minnesota Chippewa Tribe scholarship money. I went where the money was and became the first to graduate from school. But then I'm looking around UMD, and I was an economics major, which is different for, you know, not a lot of us running around in the industry. Some, but not a lot. Everywhere I would look, whether it was UMD or around the community, you just didn't really see people going out of their way to be not just inclusive, but reparative. You know, like all of the things that I was struggling with as a young single mom, all of those barriers that were put into place where they didn't want you to come out of poverty. They didn't want you to be successful. They didn't want, and you know what? I'll just admit it. It pissed me off. So my whole career has been revenge. No, I'm just kidding. No, it hasn't been revenge, but I made it through for, I don't know why, you know what I mean? A part of it's being stubborn and not letting other people decide for me what my life is gonna turn out like. And so then there's this part of me that says, with leadership, with responsibility, you have some obligation to make it a little better, right? So I ran the YWCA in Duluth for 12 years. It's a women's empowerment, social justice group, you know, so worked on those things. And was representative in space where policy was being made and program development and advocacy and, you know, bringing up youth, you know, mostly Native youth in the hillside of Duluth, you know what I mean? And Native women, but all low income, nearly all people of color, quality early childhood education. So from that started learning, like, just kind of the pieces of advocacy and community development and public policy and power and regulation and how society kind of conflates itself and bakes these things in. So I became interested in government and how to affect it. So then I went to grad school. I got a master's in public administration from the Kennedy School at Harvard with a Bush Fellowship, a Bush Leadership Fellowship. It's like, okay, well, I need to credential myself to have that gravitas within the systems, right? You're playing their game. And so I soaked it all up and then came back and started working for the res. And then eventually I ran for office, and that gets you all up to speed.
Absolutely love it. But yeah, thank you so much for your time. We'd like to ask, you know, as we close out, just if you had any final thoughts that you'd like to share with us.
I guess I'll maybe recap a bit. You're your best advocate. You don't have to apologize for it. You can take whatever space you need. Education really is the key to your own personal self-determination. You might not be so unhappy with your tribal government and, you know, your mainstream government and all of these external players if you can create your own solutions and financial stability and the ability to care for your family really does free you up to look at your citizenship in a different way. And then the last one is, you know, don't complain how things are going, whether it's in our own communities or wider communities. Citizenship comes with not only rights, but also responsibilities. And as Indigenous people, we have never had the latitude to only take the upside without the downside. And your citizenship is no different.
Karen Diver, legendary.
Awesome. Yeah. I love that. The fearlessness of advocacy and just, you know.
Take up space.
Yeah. Take up space. Don't be apologetic for it. Just, you got to do it. Love it.
Oh.
So yes, miigwech to Karen Diver. She is the inaugural senior advisor to the President for Native American Affairs at the University of Minnesota. She's also a former chairwoman of Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. I'm Cole Primo.
And I'm Leah Lam. Miigwech for listening.
Giga'wa.